Hello and welcome to the Speaking for Him podcast. My name is Andrew Gamson, and it is my privilege to welcome you to the 600th episode of the Speaking for Him podcast. And today I am super excited to have a very special episode for you. And I am just super thrilled to welcome in my OG co-host, Adam McNutt. Welcome to the show, Adam.
Hey, man, it is so good to be back with you again. And 600, oh, man, we're going to celebrate more than ever on this episode. It's amazing.
And it's great to have my newest co-host, James Wozniewski, with me as well. Hey, James.
Hey, Andrew. Thanks for having me again. It's great to meet you too, Adam. I've never met you before, so this is quite an exciting opportunity.
All right. Well, Adam, I want to roll it back to the good old days and allow you to do our quote of the day.
All right, let's see. See what we got it here. Every demonstration of God's faithfulness to us is an opportunity for us to testify of Him to others. That is from Max Anders.
So today we are definitely talking about God's faithfulness because over the last 11 and a half years, 600 straight weeks, God has kept the Speaking for Him podcast alive. Some podcasts have seasons and they take some time off, but I've been privileged to be able to cycle through three, now four co-hosts, have a pandemic happen, and still be able to be podcasting. So I'm very grateful for that. And Adam, I'm so grateful for your help in the early days, because I would not have been able to do what I've been doing today to get ready for this podcast back all those years ago. But your help and encouragement really encouraged me to become a better broadcaster and to be able to do stuff on my own that I never would have imagined. So, big time thanks to you, brother.
Oh, absolutely, man. It was a pleasure to be asked. Now, I think 12 years ago, which is insane to think of that. We won't even count in decades. We'll pretend that's not a thing. But it's been an absolute honor to be a part of it when I was, and to see how much you've grown. And, dude, you're rocking it. I love it.
Well, I'm just, as I said, so grateful. And James, you are the new era of co-host, and I've been so grateful to get to know you just really starting the first part of this year. We knew each other a little bit because you were my student at the Potter's House, but this year we began what has become a very precious friendship to me, so thank you to you as well.
Thank you, Andrew. I never would have thought that we would be doing podcasting together for the past 4 months now, and Lord willing, many more to come.
Well, as I have said many times, my favorite podcasts are podcasts where I get to have a conversation rather than just be a solo podcaster, although I am getting a little better at that as time goes on. But before we go any further, James, is there anything that you would like to ask Adam, since he's the original co-host and you're the new guy? Is there anything you would like to ask Adam about working with me? I know I'm taking my life into my hands by asking this, but I trust you guys to play nice.
Man, how do I start this? A guy with 12 years back of experience, huh? What's it like doing podcasts more than my lifetime ago?
It's not that bad. It's not that bad. Yeah.
Though I got to be honest, I'm hunched right now at my mic and I'm feeling it. So things have changed over 12 years.
I see you went through puberty.
Yeah. We're working on it.
Okay, James, I thought this was going to be at least somewhat serious.
Yeah. What was it like, I guess, at the very beginning? Because honestly, I'm only but new, and honestly, I'm kind of new to listening to some of Andrew's podcasts. I guess, what are your, I guess I could say, fondest memories of going all the way back 12 years ago?
Oh, man. Gosh, 12 years, it's so wild to say that. One of my favorite memories, especially I would say the first year of the show, I think, was just being able to get together in the radio station studio where I worked at the time. And I had met Andrew several months earlier on another radio show that I produced live on Saturday nights. And then he and I got to know each other more throughout those months to follow after you were on that one episode, that Saturday Night Andrew. And then you asked, hey, do you want to do this podcast that I'm thinking of doing? Would you want to be a part of it and help produce it with me? And I said, yeah, that sounds really cool. That sounds awesome. Let's do it. And then you invited me to co-host. And what I loved about it was with anything new, it's exciting, right? And being able to talk with Andrew about his dreams and what God was calling him to do through this podcast. And then on top of that, to see how not only just Andrew take off with something that's been a dream of his for years to be in radio, but to do his own podcast as well. It was so cool to see it from humble beginnings. And really for us, you and me, Andrew, humble beginnings is saying, going from maybe we could complete a full sentence without tripping over our words to now, you know, you have guests from different authors to broadcasters that have been on your podcast. So to see the humble beginnings of it and where it started, and then especially that first year, I know one of the shows, one of my favorites we did was with two other broadcasters, Chris and Emily Danielson. And we were just cracking up in the studio that night like none other. It was the absolute best. That's what I remember, is just that fresh zeal of that new show, doing it with a friend, and then to see where it started into where it's gone now is really exciting. So it's been cool to see the journey of the past 12 years and to be part of the start of it, which I feel very honored for that.
Well, thank you so much. I'm so glad, as I said, to have both of you here, and I just am so grateful to God for bringing people into my life at particular times. I have a couple highlights that I want to share with everyone, and so I'm going to share the first cut of that now, and then we'll discuss it a little bit afterwards.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Thank you for answering that. Now, another question I have to ask is, Andrew, you just kind of talked about this a few weeks ago. You talked about this podcast and you're like, hey, Adam, would you want to come on and do this? So I really have kind of no idea what to expect. I'm just pressing buttons at this moment. And that's about it, but I'm loving it. What can everyone out there expect from this new podcast with Speaking for Him Ministries?
Well, we're going to just take an honest look at some very important issues. We'll be dealing with relationships. We'll be dealing with things in our present culture. Like, coming up, we're going to do a podcast about the elections and why it's important to vote. There probably won't be any specific endorsements coming out of this podcast, but just a look at what the Bible has to say about being involved in the culture and just different issues as they come up. Perhaps some movie reviews, and also want to take this opportunity to say that I want this to be a fan-driven show. So if people have segment ideas or topic ideas or things that they want us to discuss, they can email me at andrew@speakingforhim.com and let me know, and we can see if we can work it into a future show. And I hope that you'll join us every Friday.
That's awesome.
Could you tell me in a little more detail how you came to be involved with Children's Bible Hour?
Well, that happened when I was about 9 years old in 1943. CBH had been on the radio for about a year. The program was live in those days on WLAV, 7th floor of the Keeler Building in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And my dad took me to a live broadcast, and we sat in the large visitor section that held about 100 people. Uncle Mel Johnson, the program host at the time, came around with a roving microphone, asked me my name, and later invited me to take part in the program with reading poems, scriptures. We had a little booklet called Charlie's Scrapbook, and it was sort of like a visual or an audio object lesson, and I did readings from that. The program was on 10 to 11 Saturday mornings, and to 11 Central War Time, because this was during the war in 1943. And I stayed with the program right until I graduated from high school, doing the bad boy parts in the dramatized stories. And
that's
then
cool.
I came back full time to the ministry in 1956 and have been there ever since.
And how long did you host the Children's Bible Hour program?
Well, at first, I worked with a lady by the name of Aunt Bertha, and a lot of people that are listening and watching this and all of that, they remember Aunt Bertha. She didn't come as director. She came as office manager. And when the program was down to about five stations with $30,000 in debt, and the board met at my folks' house, and they were ready to close down the ministry because they couldn't get anybody to take it. Uncle Mel had gone on, Uncle Bill, who had taken it, he had gone on, and they were going to close it down because they couldn't find somebody that wanted to go down with it, I guess. And okay. Aunt Bertha said, well, I'll take it till you get somebody. And the Lord really used her to bring that ministry back to life. And I was a boy on the program at the time, and she and I worked together. I was known as Mr. Charlie on the program because she was old enough to be my mother. And then she retired in 1972, and then I was the director and the host until 1999. I've stayed on at their invitation to answer letters, record new programs for the Keys for Kids broadcast, etc. So, actually, CBH has been a part of my life just about all of my life.
So there you have the first group of clips for tonight's episode, looking back on the early days of Speaking for Him. Those were from the very first podcast episode that we did, which I simply titled Ministry Overview. And the episode number 34, A Visit with Uncle Charlie. And I included episode 34 because that was one of Adam's favorite episodes that we did in the early days. Even though he never had the opportunity to meet Uncle Charlie, he still always, whenever we reminisce, talks about that episode as being a wonderful experience. So I thought you would enjoy hearing that again, Adam.
Oh my goodness, I loved it. You know when you hear a song from like your childhood and it takes you back to that moment? That's the moment I just had right there. And I gotta say, you can tell Uncle Charlie's been through puberty. I forgot how great of a voice he has, good golly. He truly was like the nicest guy to talk to though. He was wonderful. That was such a great memory.
And here is a interesting memory from those early days. When I first came on to WJQ to do the podcast after I talked to Brad Lanzer of Lanzer Broadcasting about doing a podcast, my initial thought was that they were going to give me one of the little production studios to do my podcast in, which I was grateful for. But yeah. Then when Adam met me for the first episode, he's like, we can use the main studio. And so that got my brain moving and I started inviting people to do interviews. And that's really the ones that I really enjoy the most, is being able to have people into the studio to do interviews. And so I just think that was so foundational to the show to be able to use the main studio, and then to hear through the grapevine that at least at the time, before WCSG got new studios, JQ was among the biggest as far as space goes with studios in West Michigan, which was great for when we did our Christmas Carol read on the podcast, which was the most advantageous thing we've ever done live in studio, even to this day. So that's another story altogether.
Those were awesome episodes to go back and check out sometime. Open play we did over the mic over four episodes for Christmas. I remember I got a quick share. It says we're talking about memories. I'll never forget one of our recording sessions. We had, I think, like 12 people stuffed in the studio and like eight others right outside the studio. I'll never forget our CEO walking past with this confused, scratching his head look because he's to all these people he's never met. And I was just kind of waving like, they're with me. We're doing a live production, and that was a fantastic few weeks. That was a blast.
Well, you know, the strangest thing was when I told people that I wanted to do it, and then I said, in 2 weeks, we're going to have a meeting at the studios. We had one person show up.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
I thought there was only going to be three people doing the read, but it ended up that over the course of the next couple weeks before the first read, we filled all the roles, and we had, like you said, like, I don't know, 12 to 15 people in the studio at once for all four sessions. So that was pretty exciting and not expected. It was truly a God thing. James, do you have any thoughts about hearing me from 12 years ago?
Honestly, it just shows you how far it's come since I've joined. I remember you kind of like telling me one of the first episodes that I heard you mention to me was the Pilgrim's Progress, and just to think of the history behind this entire thing, it just shows you that I just saying 600, now that you put it like that, it makes me go, whoa, this thing is a lot deeper than it looks. There's a lot of history behind this thing.
Yeah, and what's really cool is that every single one of those 600 episodes, this one included, are still on my audio archives. So you can go back and listen to any one of these episodes that I'm highlighting in its entirety, and I would certainly encourage you to do so, especially if you're fairly new to the podcast, because we've done a lot of different things over the years. I would not consider myself as someone that is great at sticking to things, but I'm grateful that God allowed me to stick to the podcasting thing. And, you know, COVID had its silver linings because we had to go home because of it. But I was able to learn how to be a good podcaster on my own because of COVID. So that gave me the push that I needed to learn some things that I probably should have learned before then. But now I'm going to share with you my next set of clips about the show, and these involve a visit with the Wally Show and a visit with the original operator of the very first West Michigan Chick-fil-A.
And as much as you rib the people that you work with the show, I know that it comes from a place of great respect for one another, and I think it would really be a fun show to work on, you know.
Yeah, these guys that I work with, the thing is, my name's on the show, okay? Which, by the way, for the record, I did not name the show. I was forced to have the name The Wally Show. I wanted something else weirder or more bizarre, and they were, when we built the show, they're like, no, you need to be The Wally Show. But you change one of the people in our mix, and the show is different. And the show is what it is, and it's gotten, like, successful, which is cool, but it is what it is because of all the people that touch it. And that's, you know, obviously Zach and Betty Rock and Becca. It's because of them that the show works. And they each have their own skill set, and they do it very well. And sometimes, like Betty is, you know, her skill set is humor and just that heart inside of the show. Becca, her skill set is kind of not letting me get away with too much and kind of keeping me in check, you know, in a fun way. But then also when she does news, like to deliver that and do a good job with that and to be funny. And then Zach's job is to be that voice of reason and sometimes protect me from myself and the things that I want to do or the angles I want to go. He's really good at going, well, let's rethink this. Maybe this isn't the best. He's a real tactician, you know, and stuff. And so I respect them all for different reasons. They're all kind of like my kids.
Well, that's great. And it really does take a wide variety of people to be successful. The very fact that I'm able to be sitting here in Franklin talking to you is because I have my brother who is willing to take time off from a job to be here, and my friend Bob who's traveling with us as well. And it wouldn't have happened without them. So, and everything that I get to do is because of people working with me. When I get done with this interview, I'm going to email it to my executive producer on my podcast, and he's going to make it sound even better.
Wow, I don't even have one of those.
And it's, I mean, and every once in a while, I just kind of pinch myself because the very fact that not only do I have a podcast, but I have an executive producer is pretty amazing. And that's one of the things that we're going to talk a little bit more about in the 150th episode, because he has really put a lot of work into the show, and it wouldn't be, I probably would have fizzled out after probably 30 or 35 if it wasn't for the fact that I got to work directly with somebody who knows radio, who knows what they're doing. And I know that Adam McNutt is super jealous of me right now and wishes that he could be on the other side of the table executive producing this episode live so that he could get a chance to interact with you, Wally, because we often talk about the bits on your show together. when I come in to record because he loads your show for my local station.
Did you say he loads or loathes?
Loads.
Loads. Okay, with a D. That's
let's very make sure that's clear.
Yeah, very very similar. Sounded the same.
Subtle, but a huge difference.
Definitely.
So, Adam, since this is such a big deal to you, do you have maybe a couple more questions?
I do. I'm curious because, like, I remember when your store opened back in January, I was.
That's good because I don't remember much of it. It's kind of becoming a blur. Yeah.
Well, I remember I pulled out of my driveway. I made it to Hudsonville, and then we got stopped in Ottawa County for the drive-thru
line. That's exactly right. The longest drive-thru in history.
Yeah, which was totally worth it, by the way. But I'm just curious. Like, I'm sure it slowed down a little bit, but what's a typical day like for you?
Yeah, it's obviously slowed down quite a bit. A typical day for me is obviously saying hi to everybody first when I get there. God blessed me incredibly. I had one of the concerns about opening up a Chick-fil-A in a brand new market is you don't have anyone that's ever worked at Chick-fil-A before. So what happens in other parts of the country when a Chick-fil-A will open? You know, naturally, you will get other Chick-fil-A employees who might say, oh, I live closer to that one, or I want to move there. And so a Chick-fil-A will open up with, you know, a handful of core people that have experience and know how to do it. Well, there's not one in Michigan, and so I didn't have that. Right before we opened, I'll just single out two people. You know, I got phone calls, and a young guy, Matt Lewis, alumni from Cornerstone, said, hey, are you hiring? Oh, by the way, I worked at Chick-fil-A for 6 years on the on the leadership team back in Cincinnati, Ohio, when I would go back for the summer.
Wow.
And then I got another call from Kelly Johnson, who, hey, Brad, I'm living in Atlanta. I grew up in Grand Rapids. I've been with Chick-fil-A for 3 years. I'd love to move home. So I literally opened the door with two solid people that knew the restaurant business, knew Chick-fil-A. And the reason I tell you that story is, you know, I'm not opening. That's probably the biggest question, too, I get personally. Like, do you have to live at the store? And I'm like, yeah, no, I don't. I've got a good leadership team. Typical day, get in, say hi to all my team members, say hi to some customers that might be dining in with us for breakfast. First thing I always do is check what catering do we have going out for the day. That's a new segment of the business that we've just kind of opened the door to here in the last 2 months. You can go to www.grsouthcatering.com for Chick-fil-A catering. And so I always check and see what's going on. And then, you know, just like any other business, check some emails, pay some bills, check in to see how the operation's running, plan out the rest of the day, how's our staffing. How's our coverage? And probably my favorite part of the day, of a typical day, though, really is twofold, and that is working alongside my team members. I'm a workaholic. It's kind of one of my love languages. You know, I love to work, and they get a big kick out of seeing me doing dishes and getting dirty. And but then the other part that I truly enjoy that's really a bonus for me is just working what we call working the dining room. And that's just literally serving my guests, getting to say hi to them, getting to know them personally. My wife, Rena, is, I think, on a first name basis with probably, you know, a greater part of 50% of our customers. And I got to tell you, had I known 20 years ago how much I truly enjoy the hospitality / service industry, I think I would have changed careers, whether it was Chick-fil-A or not. The fact that I did it with Chick-fil-A is a bonus. But I love serving my guests. I love taking their tray for them. I just enjoy serving other people. And I think that's really the heart of Chick-fil-A. If you were to interview one of the 2,000 other operators, you're eventually going to get to the Matthew 5:41, the second mile server. We just, at our core, enjoy serving people. And really, that's a typical day. Interact with my team members, pay the bills, answer emails, do fun stuff like this. Serving my guests.
And that's servant leadership.
So one of the real challenges of the podcast is chasing down interviews and getting people to come on my little show and share their stories. And because of the interactive nature that Chick-fil-A does encourage among their management teams. I actually met Brad's wife one day when we were in Chick-fil-A and just expressed the desire to have him on the show. And I'm pretty sure she talked to him, but also gave me his contact information. And he was very accommodating about having time on his schedule for us to do an interview. You know, sometimes people have people and their people direct me away from them, which makes me sad. But I really have enjoyed the various different exciting interviews and the amazing people that I've met. And of course, Adam can attest, we had great cookies that day. I was hoping for chicken sandwiches, but the cookies were good too.
I got to be honest, man. So Wally is a big morning show in the WayFM markets and stations around the country. So he's huge. I might have been a little more excited to meet the owner of Chick-fil-A locally. I was so excited. I was like fangirling, especially when he brought in the cookies. Oh, my gosh. And that was when Chick-fil-A was new to our area, period, like the very first store. And so it was a big deal around here. So when he came in and was telling us all the little like Chick-fil-A kitchen secrets and brought in those cookies, which are truly from the kitchen of God, it was awesome.
And those cookies don't lie, to borrow a common phrase.
No, they don't. They are truth-telling, gooey-ooey cookies.
Now I gotta try one.
Oh, man. James is never... You gotta get him back on the show, Andrew. Get James free cookies.
So, James, what thoughts do you have after listening to those couple of clips?
Well, with the Chick-fil-A one, I won't look at Chick-fil-A again. No. With the fact that, like, how significant that, just the way that guy just explained basically his entire heart to be able to serve others, and honestly, with the desire of basically laying down himself to be able to help serve others at the job, even the ones who might not want to, and even those who picked up the reins, two people he called out by name, that had experience providentially just came by and were like, oh, we'll help you. It just really kind of, it's really quite an encouraging thing. And it just, honestly, I remember when Chick-fil-A was first new to Michigan, it kind of makes me look at it now and go, wow, that's kind of incredible to think that you, Andrew, and you too, Adam, got to talk to the guy that kind of, I guess, started a new thing to the glove, or the mitten, I should say.
And another thing that's interesting about that is he actually started the process of getting Chick-fil-A to West Michigan like a decade previous. Like he waited like a decade to 15 years or something like that to get a Chick-fil-A in West Michigan. Now that's dedication to the Lord's chicken, let me tell you.
That's right. He's our hero there. That's patience.
But he was probably as hungry as Adam, if not more so. So that explains a lot of that.
Well, you know, and you think Sunday's a long time, but 10 years, that puts that to shame.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's the irony of Chick-fil-A for me as a traveling preacher, is often people want to take me out to eat after I preach. But even when I was in Indiana preaching, and it was the home of Chick-fil-A in the Midwest at that time, because it hadn't arrived in Michigan yet, there were a couple times at least where people would be like, well, maybe let's go to Chick-fil-A. And then we would remember that they're closed on Sunday, which is an overall good thing. Don't get me wrong.
But totally.
It was a disappointment just for the sheer fact of the one day I'm in Indiana, I can't have Chick-fil-A. So, but you learn life lessons through everything, right? And patience is a virtue. And we finally got Chick-fil-A in West Michigan. And I would say we almost have more Chick-fil-A's than we know what to do with, but they always seem busy, so maybe I'm wrong.
It's true. They're like the new Walgreens around here. They're everywhere. And we receive it. We receive it. It's a great thing.
So my next set of clips really deals with one of my most important serious issues, as well as a fun interview that I had with a very well-known guy in the broadcasting business. The first one is with Rebecca Kiesling. She is an attorney that was conceived in rape, and pro-life issues have always been a big part of what I stand for on the Speaking for Him podcast, so the opportunity to interview her was important to me. And then Jason Romano, formerly a producer on ESPN, now a host for Sports Spectrum Radio, which is a Christian sports podcast, talked about his departure from ESPN, which most people would tell you is the crown jewel of sports broadcasting, to a little ministry called Sports Spectrum and how God blessed it. So here is clip three.
Really what happens in the burning building scenario is that you have firefighters who go in for a job interview with the fire chief, and they say, just so you know, I discriminate. When I go into a building, I'm not going to save them all. Like, if there's a child in the midst of the fire, you know, they're going to be a horrible reminder. You know, they're going to be disfigured, right? And it'll be a horrible reminder, and I don't want to do that to their parents, so I'm not going to save them. Like, what fire chief in the right mind would hire that firefighter? Like, they just told you everything you need to know. And these firefighters, who are the politicians, are doing just that. They're going into the pro-life movement asking for a PAC endorsement. And I'll tell you, in Michigan, White Life in Michigan tells them to hit the road. Like, they will not endorse them. You have to be 100% pro-life. You can't discriminate, or they're not going to hire you, right? They're not going to give the endorsement. But unfortunately, like, National Right to Life and a whole bunch of other groups, like, give them endorsements. And then when they, in fact, go into a building and they leave the one behind, like, not only do they leave the one behind, but they threaten. They say, hey, if you don't allow me to discriminate, like, I won't go in. I won't save any. And then they rally the other firefighters to go along with them and to agree that we're not going to save the one, and we're going to leave the one behind. And then what happens is they come out and they, in fact, leave the one behind to die. And then they get 100% approval rating by, like, National Right to Life. They'll give them 100% approval rating. Like, Eric Cantor introduced the rape exception in the Paying Capable bill, and they gave him 100% approval rating when he's the guy who introduced the rape exception. I mean, thankfully he didn't win his primary, but, I mean, that's the nonsense that goes on in the pro-life movement. So in Michigan, we've never had a rape exception in a single law. But when I hear, like, the 99 for the one, I think of the parable of lost sheep, because Jesus said that, you know, see that you do not despise any of these little ones. And then he tells the whole parable, like, in the same paragraph, same story, same passage. He talks about how the good shepherd leaves the 99 to save the one. And he finishes by explaining the point, and he says, for in the same way, your Father in heaven is not willing that any of these little ones should perish.
Well,
and neither should we.
Absolutely. And the illustration that sticks with me is the story of the starfish. You know, there's a story about a little boy walking along the beach, and he throws a starfish back in the water, and then he walks a little further and throws another starfish in the water, and somebody comes up to him and says, you'll never get all of them back in the water. He's like, but I made a difference for this one.
How do you decide to go from ESPN and pivot over to this opportunity with Sports Spectrum?
But it wasn't until 2016, you know, when that rough patch turned into a really great patch working on Mike and Mike in the Morning, which was, you know, one of the top sports radio shows maybe ever. I love Mike and Mike, and that was an honor, let's put it that way, to work on that show, especially later in my career where I could appreciate it more. And being around two guys like Greeny and Golic, who are the top of the top in terms of what they were doing, and people listening, a lot of people watched and listened to that show, and they included me in their show. So I was on the show pretty much every day. Usually they would just mention my name. I wasn't talking on the show, but, you know, I was in the studio with them for a full year, having a blast. We got to travel, Andrew, all across the country. We were on the NFL, you know, in, where were we? We were in Houston for the Super Bowl. We were in Chicago for the World Series that year. We were in Tampa for the national championship for college football. We were at the NBA Finals when LeBron played Golden State and Steph. So we got to go to really cool events with Mike and Mike, and I got to travel with them. So I'm at the peak in terms of the most fun I've ever had at my job was at ESPN was the last year. Because in one of those conversations, it was the president of a ministry called Pro Athletes Outreach. And in the fall of 2016, 4 years ago now, wow, I got a call from a guy named Steve Stenstrom. And we were texting or DMing on Twitter. And he says, "Hey, Jason, we just purchased a ministry called Sports Spectrum. You ever heard of it?" I said, "Absolutely. Sports and faith." He goes, "Yeah. Would you ever have any interest in coming and working with us with the Sports Spectrum brand?" And so I said, "Well, what would I be doing?" He's like, "Well, we really want to rebuild this brand up." So it's been a brand for 35 years, but it's 2016 at that time. We really want to kind of take it into the next stage of digital content, you know, podcasting, website, that type of stuff. And we'd love to have you kind of spearhead that effort and lead it. I say, "Okay, that's interesting. Maybe this is where God wants me to go." I said, "What else?" And he said, "Well, we want you to host and produce a podcast." And I said to him, "I don't think you have the right guy." And he goes, "Why?" I said, "Because I haven't hosted anything." And this is the truth. I had not hosted anything since college. And that was 20 years prior. So I had worked coming out of college behind the scenes as a producer since 1997 until 2016. So I thought I was a pretty good producer, and I kind of, you know, did my job there at ESPN and all that, but I had not hosted anything. But Steve said something to me. He goes, "Jason, you worked with the best hosts sports broadcasting has to offer. Mike and Mike, Chris Berman, Bob Lee, Stuart Scott, Kevin DeGondi, Jay Harris, Sage Steele, Linda Cohen, like all of these legends, you worked with them all. So you know how to do interviews." I said, "Okay." And to be honest with you, Andrew, my dream when I was in college was to host my own sports show. I hadn't done that, and I kind of gave up on that dream, but God has a funny way of laughing at us when, you know, we give up on something or don't think that there's another opportunity. And this is where Sports Spectrum came in. And so I left February 10th, 2017, which was my last day at ESPN. It's a leap of faith, a lot of prayer, a lot of discussion. I could go on for another half hour about the process of actually saying yes, but I just felt like it was from God. And I knew if it wasn't from God, the door would shut very quickly upon leaving. But the door has swung wide open since I left.
So, Adam, what are your thoughts on that collection of clips?
You know, it got me thinking, man, that one of my favorite things about this podcast that we got to do for a while and you continue to be able to do is the name of it is Speaking for Him, but you also allow other people to speak for Him as well through their own stories and to be able to talk about things that not every show or market or media outlet could you talk about, like pro-life issues or how somebody felt called by God to leave a place to go to another place. And just listening to those stories back again and hearing how people are able to share that openly and prayerfully encourage someone else through their life and through their testimony, I love it. And it's been amazing. You know, God's been faithful to this podcast for 600 episodes now to continue to allow guests to do that.
I definitely love having guests. You know, when we first started the podcast, I wasn't even thinking about having guests. But then when I realized I had the big studio, I started having them. And I'm to the point now where if I could book a guest every single week, I would. I like to talk, that's for sure. I like to edit a lot more when other people are on the show because there's less editing to do, because most of my editing when it's just me here in my home studio is me cutting out the fat, the extra stuff that I say, or sometimes even the stupid sounding stuff that I say. And I would much rather have other people share their stories and be able to glorify God through this podcast. And like I said, I've made some great friends through it as well that I still talk to. And so that's a really great thing that this podcast has allowed me to do. James, do you have any thoughts on those last couple of clips?
Yeah. I really like the way you put it, Adam, about how it's not just called Speaking for Him because of Andrew talking about God himself, but also people sharing their stories or their testimonies of where they're coming from. Like, some of those were pretty incredible. Like, for crying out loud, an ESPN, like a former person of that, starting his own podcast with God involved in the center of it, that's very encouraging, you know, because it's sometimes easy to just look at the television screen and say, oh, that guy's not Christian, and I am. Mm-hmm. And honestly, hearing that was honestly quite encouraging that Walmart isn't the only saving place. Really, it just shows you that God is still at work saving people, and he's still gathering his church. That's why we're still on this earth right now. And honestly, if I may talk about this, I really liked that analogy about the starfish, throwing one out into the water, and some might come back, or however it was described. I just really like it a lot, because at the end, the emphasis of if there is at least one that stays, that's really what matters. Or what, however you put it, Andrew, in that old clip, it just really hit the hammer on the nail perfectly. It really just makes you think of the mindset of abortion, but also, if I may say this, also for evangelism.
Absolutely, James. And I just really feel that God has given me a voice for the voiceless, whether it is those that are subject to the possibility of abortion, or whether it's just someone that is feeling unheard or unseen. God is in the business of using useless people. And by that, I don't mean literally useless. I mean people that the world thinks are useless. And so if I have been able to shine a light on that and show them that a vast majority of the Bible heroes that we revere from Scripture are actually what the world would consider useless, but they still did mighty things for God, then hopefully they will see that they as well can do mighty things for God. And it doesn't take perfection to do that, because none of us are perfect. All it takes is a willing heart. And speaking of willing hearts, this next set of clips, the final set of clips that I have to share with you today, has my most listened to interview ever. And it really came as a surprise how listened to this was. The last I looked at it, it was something like 1,400 and something listens. I think there were like over 500 in the first week, and so on and so forth. It blew up. Ironically, it blew up in my comments on social media before I even posted the episode. Adam remembers kind of walking with me through those couple days when I was basically ducking social media. I almost took the initial post down because of it, but I left it up there, and it actually came up in my memories. I think it was just a random memory. It wasn't really Facebook memories, but it came up in my memories for some other reason, or maybe just because I was looking up the podcast or whatever, and I saw some of those comments again, because they were some pretty vile ones. And, you know, I always said that I was hoping for one or more of my podcasts to go viral. I wasn't exactly hoping for it to be in such a negative way. But right. It's evident from the fact that so many people listened that it impacted people. And even hopefully people that it impacted negatively initially, hopefully they learned some lessons from it. But do you remember some stuff about those couple days, Adam?
Oh, yeah, I sure do. There was a lot of serpentine going on from your end there, man. And I'll never forget, even on my own Facebook feed, because you were getting so many comments and so much attention to it, when I'd open up my Facebook app, your status there would be the first thing that would pop up, because it was refreshing and refreshing and catching so much fire. So, and I remember texting you and be like, hey, man, how you doing? Like, hang in there. And you're just like, yeah, I didn't expect this. And then I think it got to a point after 24 or 48 hours, you're like, I'm just going to kind of step back for a little bit, which sometimes is the best you can do, and just, you know, go for it. And there was a moment I remember where you were like, I'm kind of maybe a little hesitant to post the episode or not, but you're like, I feel like I'm supposed to do this and share this conversation. And I'm so glad you did. I think that was the Holy Spirit saying, I want this conversation to happen. And so extra credit, bro, to you for following through even in what was a little bit of a hostile couple days.
Interesting behind the scenes tidbit as well. I think our Zoom conversation when we were actually doing the interview dropped like 3 or 4 times. And I told Cameron, I said, I don't think the devil wants this conversation to happen, but it is happening. So That's the first part of this clip. The second part of this clip is my interview with Karen Kingsbury, New York Times bestselling author. And this is one of those interviews where I talked about having to go through Karen's people and having to be patient because it took 5 years approximately for this interview to happen. But she couldn't have been more gracious, and so I'm excited to share with you this final clip. Listen to the redemption of Cameron Robinson and a visit with Karen Kingsbury. Just brief clips from each of these podcasts, and they are podcast number 560 and 580, respectively.
So did you come back to reality, as you say, as a woman before you came to know Jesus in a personal way?
It was all in one moment. So people ask me, or people message my mom and be like, what did you do to save Cameron? I have a child who's in a similar situation. Please help me. I don't know what to do. And the only answer you can give them is God. God is the reason he pulled me out of the depths of hell and brought me to where I am today. So my mom drug me to church. I was very unhappy. But my sister, she said, hey, I started going to this new church. I think it'd be really beneficial for Cameron. Bring her, let's see what happens. So my friend goes to the church, and I was like, I'm gonna sit with her. I'm not gonna sit with, my parents, so you know, my nurse. And the preacher starts preaching, and like the first words he says are, there are only two genders. My friend actually told me this last night. She said that I looked at her and I went, triggered. I don't even remember doing that. So the preacher, my first time going to church, he preaches on transgender and sexuality and the being two genders. And by the end of it, I was on the floor sobbing, filled with conviction, filled with guilt, filled with the Holy Spirit. And that was November 20th. I believe that was November 20th. So 2 days after my assistant did. And I was that was it. I was changed. I got baptized in April of 2022.
So your biggest character group is the Baxter family. And that started as a 5-book series with Gary Smalley, if I'm remembering correctly. So how did that come about?
Yeah, so with my first 6 novels, they just weren't picking up traction. It was funny because, you know, it's a kind of a process. So I'd go into a bookstore and not tell them out that I was Karen Kingsbury. And then I would say, do you have that new book by Karen Kingsbury, Waiting for Morning or whatever, one of the first 6? And they would say, yes, we do, but we are out of stock. We just can't seem to keep those on shelves. And of course, you know, you could, you just have to order more. But it was kind of stuck like in a rut where they would publish 15,000 copies and they would run out, and then I would have another book, 15,000 copies. Well, Gary Smalley, who has passed on to heaven several years back now, but he was a speaker and a writer about relationships and godly relationships. And he was one of my like 15,000 readers. Who knew? So he contacted me through like his people to my agent, whatnot, and said, I want to meet with her. So my husband and myself and our kids, we went to Branson, Missouri, where Gary lived. We met with him and his wife, Norma, went out on their boat with them. And he said, okay, here's my proposition. He said, I think you are the best novelist I've ever read. And I want you to write a series about a family and incorporate some of the teachings that I've been teaching about relational, you know, love in God's kingdom, like love is a decision and these kinds of things. And so literally, he prayed that my books would do so well and that I would do so well as a novelist that one day people might not know him, but they would know me. It was like unheard of thought. It was like, what? You know, He was very gracious and very humble, kind man. Well, on the flight home, God gave me the Baxter family. I'm just on a single flight and I'm writing as fast as I can in a notebook, like the Baxters. Okay, John and Elizabeth, he's a doctor, like they live. I could just see it, all of it, their kids, the storylines that might come. I could see five books. And, you know, when I got back home, of course, I called Gary and I let him know. And Gary was in the middle of a contract deal where he was doing a big, big contract with a Christian publisher. And he wanted to include these novels. Now, he said, I'm not going to write anything, but I just want you to know, like, I want to do what I can to help them be seen by the people. And so he got Tyndale to agree to include this series of books. I think they thought he was crazy to want to include novels in his big umbrella contract. But it ended up being that the novels are really, it ended up being the sweet spot for that part of his career. So he didn't do any of the writing, but he was the one who encouraged me. Kind of, there was like a forgiveness is a choice, those kinds of things, like just basically beautiful teachings that were simple and became kind of the theme for that particular story. And after five books, Gary called me and he said, this isn't me. He goes, my name can't be on this book. He goes, you have wings now. He goes, you go fly and take these characters wherever God has for you, you know, to take them. And so then there became, I mean, you know, I can still see them. I mean, I can still see what the Baxters are doing today, 25 books later.
So there you have a walk through basically the entire history of 11 and a half years of the Speaking for Him podcast. Basically, just to give you an idea of where I went, I had one podcast from each 100 episodes, but I also had bonus content with the very first episode because I can't do a retrospective about the Speaking for Him podcast without talking about the very first episode. And then the bonus of having Cameron Robinson's podcast on there because it was the most listened to in the history of Speaking for Him. So it's been quite a journey. Adam, do you have any thoughts as we're wrapping up here?
It has been a journey. I think what's really cool too is from that first clip you had talked about, you said, you know, we're going to talk about certain topics about faith and maybe some movie reviews and everything you've talked about that you're going to do from day one, you've done over the past 11 and a half years and continue to do. I think that's awesome because sometimes people will start with a goal and then maybe it'll change due to life or just things go a different way or somebody goes really off the rails and the show is not what it used to be. But you're still doing that call through this podcast that God gave you 11 and a half years ago on that first episode. And that's an incredible accomplishment because not a lot of people can say that they've been able to do that. So I am proud of you and I am so excited for you, man.
And I have to say here that there was a time when Adam called me into the studio, and he said, before we record, I have something to say to you. I need to step back from the podcast, which I did not realize from the beginning of the show just how much of a sacrifice Adam made, because he made a huge sacrifice. I think he said at one point that when we started the podcast, he'd never been busier, but he still felt called not to say no. So I'm extremely grateful that he didn't. And he was with me probably between leaving and coming back briefly. He was probably with me for, you know, over 300 episodes. And I'm so grateful, Adam, for all the work you did on the show. But also, I was thinking about just what Gary Smalley said to Karen Kingsbury at the end of that clip, where he told her, these are your characters, take them and go fly with them now that I have given you steam to get off the ground. And really, that's what catapulted her to New York Times bestselling status. She's now written, I think, a total of 35 or 40 books about the Baxters. And wow. So she continues to write about that family. And there is now an Amazon Prime original TV series about the Baxters. They filmed 3 seasons, 1 with 10 episodes and 2 with 12 episodes. They were all 3 released within the last couple weeks on Amazon Prime. So I would encourage you to check that out. I've watched the first seven or so episodes. I will be reviewing them on my podcast once I've watched them, and I'm excited about that. But I just want to say thank you, Adam, for giving me the wings to fly and for making my podcast so professional in the early days. I know you joke about your inexperience, but you really do have a natural affinity for broadcasting, and I'm so thankful for you, brother.
Oh, thanks, man. That means a lot. And it's honestly been an honor. I've been happy to do it, and glad we can still check in every now and again on the mic, like tonight, man. So thank you very much.
To think that a month before the COVID pandemic, I almost deleted this little program called Zoom, and now that's how I do most of my interviews, is through Zoom, because I wouldn't be able to fit very many people in my small bedroom studio, let alone have most of them drive the distance that it would take to get here. So I'm very thankful for that little video conferencing software that I almost deleted but didn't.
I know. I think back to 2019 when someone mentioned, oh, Zoom, and people are like, what's that? Like, you're going fast or something? And now nobody doesn't know what Zoom is. It's on all of our phones and computers.
So, James, I want to thank you for being here as well and for being here in studio tonight, live and in person. Do you have any final thoughts for our audience as we wrap up this 600th podcast episode?
I just want to say thank you very much for having me be a part of your podcast. And honestly, from the startup, training me how to do podcasting, and honestly, getting some experience, and honestly, talking to a wonderful brother like you and Adam today, and it's been awesome. And honestly, Lord willing, like I said, I started a nonprofit ministry, and I want to do podcasts of my own, and it would be awesome maybe to even have you guys on there a few times. And really, it's just awesome, like, sort of like that author as well. The person basically handed over the characters to her. Right now, you're kind of teaching me how to do podcasting, and Lord willing, maybe one day I'll start my own and fly my wings myself instead of being carried, you know? And yeah, just really awesome stuff. Thank you, Andrew. Love you very much, brother. And I'm really glad to get to know you too, Adam. Love you too, man.
Hey, back at you. And you provide the Chick-fil-A cookies, we'll be on your podcast anytime. But in all seriousness, thank you. It's been great to get to know you too over the podcast here. And this is a testament to the Speaking for Him podcast. God continues to provide with wonderful co-hosts and producers, and may continue to be blessed for many years.
Well, to be honest, I don't think I would have had the idea for the podcast, at least the umption to ask WJQ to use their studio for the podcast, had I not met Adam on a snowy January evening in mid-January of 2012. And we really hit it off from the very beginning, and he's been one of my best friends since then. So as I said, the best part about podcasting is the people. And so I'm super grateful for all the people that have come into my life because of this little show, and I hope that you've all enjoyed it. If you're a long-time listener, or if you're a short-time listener, one of the best ways that you can introduce other people to this podcast is letting them hear the 600, because they'll be able to hear all the highlights from over the years, and I hope it will bless them. And if it does bless you and you do share it, please let me know by reaching out with the contact information that's about to roll at the end of the show. And with that being said, I will simply say, have a great week, and keep serving the best of masters.
Thank you for listening to today's episode. Your host has been Andrew Gomeson, founder of Speaking for Him. For more information on today's show, and to leave us comments and voicemails, visit speakingforhim.blogspot.com. You can find Andrew's ministry at speakingforhim.com. That's speaking, the number 4, H-I-M. You can also interact with us at facebook.com/speakingforhim and on Twitter @speakingforhim. And when you look for us on iTunes and Stitcher, let us know what you think of the podcast by leaving a rating and review.